Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Security Nation. Today I got to talk with Justin Pagano. Justin is the information security lead here at Rapid7, and you know, he's the guy who keeps us all safe. He and the team there in the security house, if you will. And we spent the time talking about deception technologies. What does that mean? How can you set them up? What are best practices for them? How they can be used overall, the data that comes out of it, all of the kind of nitty-gritty that's coming out of that world right now as we see more and more people focusing on deception along with detection. And we actually debated that in terms of whether deception was a subset of detection or not and how that actually all works together. So enjoy episode 16 of Security Nation with Justin Pagano and Matt Hathaway, who seemingly is vying for a co-host role here on Security Nation since this is his second one in a row, and I think maybe his sixth one of all time. So with that, enjoy.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
You should open a window. You probably don't have a window in your office.
I don't. No, I have.
He's not fancy.
I don't have a window. And the nice thing is what I always do to Matt when he's on the podcast is I start recording before he knows I am. So I'm already recording, which is always good. So awesome. Here's something I'm seeing more and more of, and I'm hearing about it. You see it in the news. You see it in Gartner, and we'll talk a little bit about Gartner coming up. But the concept of deception technologies. And Justin, I'll go to you first, but then Matt, I want to hear you. Let's start really, really simple. And before we start getting deeper into all of the other stuff, to you, what are deception technologies and why are they important in security?
Yeah, I'd say generally deception technologies are a subset of detection technologies, and they focus on creating an illusion for attackers, an illusion of something that they want to make it easier for you to detect when they're going after it. That seems like a pretty fair starting point in my mind for it.
Okay.
I mean, I agree.
This isn't like the presidential debate. You don't get 2 minutes to rebut.
So I don't get four and a half.
No, right. Exactly. you're a puppet.
Oh.
Wrong. Wrong.
Already Putin.
Wrong.
I was going to say, I definitely think of it as a subset. Not always, I don't think, is it definitely going to be a detection, but it's
getting them. I love the term illusion that you used, Justin, is like tricking somebody into reveal behavior, yeah. Right? And sometimes it helps you find out what's normal. Like, mm-hmm. What is normally scanning the network? You should know, right? Like, mm-hmm. Of course you have vulnerability scanners and things like that. And to some degree, putting deception in place will also find, like, who in the organization is just not really staying within the lines, right? They don't realize they shouldn't be doing something. And so it's not always detection, but it is very much like a subset of providing visibility that you can't get just by analyzing logs or something like that.
All right, so you guys talk about illusions. and if this was a video podcast, I'd do some really cool David Copperfield stuff right now.
At least I get to see it.
Right, except shh. What do you mean by, I mean, obviously there's honeypots and there's honey users and honeyfile and all that stuff. But for, again, breaking it down, like, what are those illusions that maybe are the most effective when it comes to deception technologies?
Ooh.
Yes.
I feel like if someone actually answered that question, they'd be trillionaires right now. I feel like there's still a good amount of deception techniques people haven't figured out are worthy of implementing yet. So honeypots, those are the go-to example for deception. And they've been around for a while, and they're kind of becoming more popular again. But yeah, we have this notion of honey files and honey tokens and honey creds and users. And fundamentally, these deception technologies are devised based on what we know about how attacks work in the real world. you know, it's less theoretical and it's more evidence-based. So we know that an attacker technique is sometimes scanning a network range to look for stuff. Okay, let's drop a system in that network range, honeypot. We know attackers might blindly grab and zip up directories that contain a bunch of files and upload them somewhere else and then start opening them in that somewhere else place. Okay, let's put some fake files there. So like, as we start to figure out different attacker techniques, we try to think of new deception techniques to catch them with. And so I think just fundamentally and not specifically, deception techniques are determined by, you know, evidence-based threat modeling, if you want to call it that. Or at least that's how we should determine what are useful deception technologies.
Right.
Yeah, I love that, breaking it down like that. I actually think, and then each one, there's a little nuance, right? Like, don't make it blindly obvious that this is a fake system or a fake, but don't overthink it, you know? Like, don't call it, like, next year's financials, please don't read.
You know? Sensitive server.
Very, very critical server with valuable data on it.
CEO's pictures.
Right, but like, if you're gonna make fake users, try seeing if you could make it an admin and it's disabled. And ooh, a lot of people stop tracking when an account's disabled if it gets re-enabled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, so that might be like, hey, maybe I can test if this still works, so I can re-enable it and then try and test if it still works. And
yeah,
and so if it's got, you know,
that's actually really interesting because something my team has been trying to brainstorm and develop are some deception techniques that actually leverage previously active things like accounts or keys. So, you know, if we have a system that's devised to automatically and very frequently deactivate and renew API tokens or something like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Every time we deactivate an old API token, now we monitor that as a honey token. And anytime we see it being used, we alert on it. And that way we can say, wait a second, we used to use this from this time to that time, and it was used by this system and that system. Some breach may have happened in those two areas during that time. Let's go look through our logs.
Oh, that's smart.
That's cool.
Something like that.
Yeah, like an admin leaves the company.
Right.
Remove their account, turn it into a honey user.
Exactly.
Right?
So Justin, it goes into something that we're kind of talking about previously before we hit record. But if I'm a guy like you, how hard is that to do? Like, how do I get started doing that if I'm interested in making sure that happens? It sounds as if, I mean, from a simpleton's mind, of like, if I had these old tokens or I had an old user, or I had whatever it is, or even if I had old files, that then I just kind of de-identify or I change a little bit or whatever it is, I basically just have to start tracking that to see who touches it.
Right. In a basic way, as long as you have some kind of logging tool that can also take actions based on certain conditions within those logs, you could devise your own deception techniques just from that setup.
Okay.
Now there are plenty of like out of the box open sourced or off the shelf tooling or tools that can help you more quickly implement deception techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm talking to someone who's like me and they're trying to think, well, where do I get started, or how do I get started? You know, assuming that people out there who are interested in deception techniques already have some other security fundamentals in place, like fundamental protection techniques rolled out, then you got to start thinking about, okay, well, what do I care about in my organization in terms of what are you trying to protect? You should know what you're trying to protect. This data over here, those systems over there. You should have done some kind of system inventorying, system classification, data classification before you even start thinking about deception and whatnot.
Right.
I'm shocked to hear you shouldn't start your program with deception.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, we laugh, though, but we also know the truth of, like, getting all the stuff done that you just talked about isn't easy either. Right. We certainly talked to plenty of customers who are still challenged with getting to that point. But I think to your point, Matt, of like, this isn't something you just start with. This is something further down the line overall when you're ready to do this. So you have to be semi-mature.
And but I think there are levels of maturity for deception as well. So the first and simplest thing someone could do today, I would say, is honeypots. It's because honeypots have been around for so long, but also because they're becoming more and more popular. There are more solutions out there that are easier to use than they were before. Okay. And it's also the simplest way to get some bang for your buck. You drop a system in place that you know no one's going to be using, no one at your organization should be using. Then you'll start to see either malicious activity or benign activity that you never knew about before. This technology team over here, they're running this monitoring tool or scanning tool. I had no idea that was on our network. Well, now I'm going to whitelist it for the honeypot. And now I've just reduced that signal to noise ratio. I'm getting more signal and less noise. And I can continue improving my honeypot deployment. But that's a very simple place to start, and I think you can get a lot of value out of just using honeypots. Mm-hmm. Then from there, you can do more complex things with honey files and tokens and users, which are maybe a little more complex to set up than a honeypot, depending on what kind of resources you have at your organization or talent you have at your organization.
I remember when Justin went after me because I installed a print driver. Ooh. And it decided to broadcast my machine to the entire network.
Shame on you.
Bad move, Matt. Bad move.
Yeah. And Matt's still here. That's interesting. I would have let him go.
I disguised that malware as a good print driver.
Nice. Good for you. So
could you?
I guess, all right, I've done all this. I'm doing, I got people. I got, my honeypots, my honey users, my honey files, my honeys all over the place. Or I got them in the right place, I should say. And I do want to talk about that. But, okay, great. So I get that information. I get that data back. What do I do with that? How's that? How is it helping me? At the end of the day, that I know someone's trying to access that, or there's just some sort of behavior on that.
Right. If you're seeing activity coming out of your, honey entities, if you don't immediately know why those alerts are being generated, you need to ask a handful of questions. Like, what's causing this? Why is it causing it? When is it causing it? How often is this going to happen in the future? If the answers to those questions are something like, oh, it's this server over here that IT is using for some kind of temporary monitoring or inventorying they're doing on the network, and they're doing it because they need to reconcile license usage for certain device types on your network, and they're only going to be doing that for a month, okay, that's fine. We'll temporarily whitelist that activity.
Yeah.
But if you can't answer that first question and the second question and the third question or any other set of questions that help you better understand what's going on, you should get nervous and you should dig deeper. And digging deeper involves going through logs that get you closer and closer to the source of what's generating that activity. Mm-hmm. So if you can see where the activity is coming from, oh, IP address over here, that's a workstation. Let me look closer at that workstation's logs. Then you try to see what process at the time this activity originated from this IP on this port, what process was using that port? If you do have those logs that have been aggregated over time, you can search through them, and then you can say, okay, well, what launched that process? When was it launched? Is the user of that workstation aware of that process running on their machine? Oh, they are? Oh, they're looking for a printer on the network? Okay. I called them on the phone. Yes, it's Matt on the phone. I validated that it was them trying to print out plane tickets to Las Vegas or something like that.
Yet again.
Cool. Yeah, you party a lot, Matt. That's a little weird. Yeah, that's malicious activity. I don't know if I approve of that. But
exactly. I didn't see that in Concur. I didn't approve of that.
There's definitely a predictable set of questions people should be asking, but there's also some unpredictability. There's always something you're going to see that you've never encountered before, and you've never had to ask questions about it before. So just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It sounds sounds like generic advice, but like being able to think on your feet about it, being able to think, come up with those questions on the fly when you haven't seen certain activity before is a super, super valuable skill to have when you're trying to leverage deception technologies.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned something though that I'll ask Matt of to at least the initial answer, but you know, sometimes I fear in these, is it worth the amount of alerts that I'm going to be getting? I'm already getting too many. So, you know, I don't want to get more alerts. I don't want to go through my logs. I don't want to do all of this kind of stuff. But from what I'm hearing from the two of you, it's like this level of alert, you know, this kind of information that I'm getting because of its inherent nature as a deception technology, actually the fidelity of that is probably higher than your typical alert from the get-go.
Yeah, and I think the key is something Justin mentioned many times you heard was whitelisting. Like, yes, you want to know what, you know, about that benign behavior. You want to be able to say that makes sense to me and then whitelist it. And after, you know, initial period of implementing the deception, you've whitelisted the known good, the expected. And so you shouldn't have a ton of alerts, right? It shouldn't be like a regular, everybody just, every week a new person scanning the network. That's, that's not what you'd expect. But also, like it's, how many of these can you implement? Like it's not that many. It's not like everyone is going to have 1,000 alerts or you didn't really think through what you implemented or, you know, maybe it's just not a successful piece of deception technology. If it's so deceptive that everything triggers it, then it's not really giving. It's not identifying the behavior you sought out to identify.
The antonym of deceptive is. But I guess then that begs the question, and we've talked about this a little bit, but not a lot. Not certainly not here. But what are? This might be unfair. Are there best practices for the amount of deception technologies you're using, the amount of honeypots, honey files, honey, like, and I know it depends. But let's try to give some guidance of like, here's kind of some parameters or best practices when you're actually going to deploy this stuff.
You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head if there's sort of a go-to place or resource that describes best practices in the sense of, oh, you should always have these types of deception technologies or this many of this type or something like that.
I think
there are a lot of commonalities between virtually every business, let's say, or government organization on the planet that we can safely recommend. You should be using honeypots and you should be using honey files and you should be using honey users. Like those three things just off the top of my head are common. The things that those deception techniques seek to identify are common attributes of an attack, of many attacks we've seen over the course of, you know, the internet's existing. Network computers existing. And so like anything beyond those three, it depends. You know, using them depends on what risks your organization are trying to address or mitigate, what you're trying to protect, where that stuff that you're trying to protect lives, how things get access to that stuff. Once you start answering those questions, you'll have a better idea of what deception technologies you need beyond some of the basic. But I think the basics should include honeypots and honey files and honey users because
that's
so many different attacks. There's that reconnaissance that happens on a network that involves some kind of scanning or probing. And there's data being stolen, and data typically exists in the form of files or they live in databases somewhere. And having some kind of honey database or honey table, maybe that's a future deception technology someone could develop. But yeah, addressing those common attack techniques that we see time and time again with some of these deception technologies is the way to go. You just always look back to how are attacks unfolding today in the real world? What does the evidence show about how attacks unfold? And is that relevant to my organization? Well, if you have network computers, probably yes. if you don't have networks, if you're using paper and pencil and fax machines, probably not.
Perfect.
Right.
I like that.
You do love fax.
I do
bring
love
it up
faxing
all the time.
Yeah, fax marketing has kind of come back. I'm bringing it.
Evidence-based marketing.
It's a big thing for me.
But I think, and the final point on that is, you know, the beauty, and it's something that Justin already alluded to, is if this isn't, you know, it's a system that there's no problem if it goes down. This is not, it's one of those detections that it's not going to interrupt network traffic. It's not going, there's very low downside to implementing. And so if you say like, hey, could we put one in each different network in the company?
Sure.
What's the harm?
Right.
Right? Like very easily you could do that.
Yeah.
So that is one of the benefits, is it's very low downside to implementing them. And so assuming you can put in the time and effort to manage them.
Right.
After that, it's like, why not?
And here's a potentially stupid question. Okay, so we've talked about users and tokens and files and blah, 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 pods, etc. Have people, I think I've actually read about this, but creating just an entire honey network that people kind of go towards instead of your own network. Is that
there are some startups.
Part of where we might go? Of I can create an entire deception mirror world that they think they're in the right place, but they're not.
Yeah, you know, if you've solved every other security problem that organizations need to solve and you have the time to do it, that would be a wild experiment. I mean, honey nets are they exist. Different research teams and organizations will develop them. But for a security team that's tasked with defending their organization, maybe like the Facebooks of the world or the Googles of the world who've really gotten security down to a T, if they can justify building out a honey net, an internal honey net that's like a very precise mirroring or similar mirroring of their production networks, if they can justify building that because it pertains to a real threat to their organization that they've identified or modeled or a real risk that they're worried about that they want to get more detection around, absolutely. Like that would be – and if they can prove it out and really work out the kinks – and like a lot of technology companies do, open source it. Well, that'd be nifty. I don't know how they would open source, like build your own virtual network of But yeah, no, that'd be wild.
Because I want something
interesting.
I want something that's like Inception. I'm going to create an entire VNet, right? But then I'm going to put my own network inside of that one, and then an honey inside of that one.
I a startup.
I like it.
How does time pass?
We're going to call it.
Does time pass faster on the outer one?
Time is slower on the outer one, so it's the opposite of that.
Okay.
And I'm going to call my. It's going to be called Leonardo DiCaprio.
Or is it going to
be
called
my startup?
Inception Deception.
Inception Deception. Right. I like
hashtag
it.
Inception Deception.
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect. So let's talk though, but seriously, let's talk about kind of productization of these types of things. So we alluded to Gartner at the beginning of this, and I know Matt, you obviously talked to them a lot, and we talked to them a lot overall. But Anton Chavakin has started to talk about deception. Other people have too, but he seems to be the most vocal from an industry analyst standpoint.
In Augusto,
right.
Right.
And they're going back and forth too, like, you know, it's like dueling blogs. but is this, in your opinion, obviously, but is this going to become its own market segment? Or like, we were talking about UBA earlier. It's like, there's UBA, but that's a technology, not a market segment any longer. Is deception going to be a technology within products, or is it going to be its own set of products, or is time will tell?
Time will tell, right? Like, there are definitely vendors, there are startups that's what they do, and they try to do it best. Deception, just like UBA was the same. And obviously our approach, we believe it should be integrated in, but who's to say today which one is going to be judged as the best, which one's going to win out. But yeah, there are certainly vendors, and some of them have some pretty cool stories to tell about, you know, spinning up an identical network and creating fake traffic.
So you mean like my idea that I just came up with?
Yeah, but they don't have
the same. Are you talking about that new startup, Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, Inception Deception.
Why did I close that? Right. Why did I close that $50 million round?
Well, that's because you're from Boston.
On a value of, I don't even want to tell you. But do you think that there's going to be a moment too where am I going to have to fill out a survey for a Deception Magic Quadrant as I'm knee deep in?
As they haven't come close to having one for UEBA, right. I'm saying no.
Okay.
I think they very point. Much they start
it's a,
out
it's
and
it's a parallel type of look.
Yeah, and if they see enough to talk about, they'll create a market guide.
Yeah, yeah.
But like Magic Quadrant is like it's a lot of work for them too.
Right.
Like they do that for very well established, distinct markets.
So, all right, one last question as we're running out of time, and mainly because I was late. And but no one knows that from the recording until now. And if they made it this long, I'm excited. So, Justin,
yes.
In terms of Deception Technologies, we've talked about a lot of things, and you've alluded to some maybe futures, but what gets you excited about what you possibly could do with this stuff?
Ooh, I think that example I gave before where you sort of dynamically register what used to be a real thing or entity or user or token in your environment as a new honey thing when you're done using it. I think that becomes very valuable because that was being used in a live environment, that user account or that API key. And you should know if you're mature enough and you have a great inventory, you should know where it was being used and when it was being used and when it was stopped being used. So once you see that alert come in, you have a better idea of where you need to go sifting through, like which system you need to sift through to look for signs of compromise. Because there are only so many places an API key lives or should live. And it just makes it easier to track down a past compromise or breach of a system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once we can get away or once we can add that to the mix, because right now the current set of deception technologies really revolve around pure fake things that you turn into a deception technology, a net new server, which has only ever been used as a honeypot versus a domain admin that used to be a real domain admin, but yep. Now it's been retired and you've turned it into a honey user.
Okay. I love it. It's cool. Good. That's it. That's all I got.
All right.
I'm excited about our new startup. Pretty exciting. And we probably shouldn't do this on a corporate podcast. That was kind of dumb. Oh, well. All right. I'll give up.
Right. They don't listen to it.
You know what? I just sold the company. It doesn't matter. I just sold it.
I've got a good golden parachute.
We're doing great. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks.
On this. It was super fun. And we're going to have to figure out the next topic real soon and have you back.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
All right, man.
Pew, pew. Talk-